Good morning and welcome to day 8 of Challenge 2016. Now, in some states, women are more financially equal to men. That includes Hawaii. But how will the idea of not so bad turn to equal means equal? We'll ask Rachel Lyons of the National Partnership for Women and Families about Hawaii's gender wage gap. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. In a new fantasy play, Born to be Wild at La Pietra, director Lisa Bogus asks her student performers to see the world as animals see it. And Maui Wave writer Tatiana Howard has watched her annual Butterfly Effect event take hold around the world.
That's the conversation for Wednesday, April 13th. Coming up next, the news.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Good morning, Beth Ann.
Good morning.
Going to look at how Hawaii stacks up in pay equity, yeah?
You bet. And we've had that conversation for a long time. But, of course, with what we all kind of understood from yesterday's date as equal pay day, well, not so much.
Not so much.
Not so much. Now, it's not as bad as in some other states, but you know that's small comfort to any woman in Hawaii earning less than a man in a comparable position. Throughout the U.S., as we mentioned a moment ago, yesterday marked how far into this year a woman had to work to equal what a man made last year. And with over half a century since the passage of the Equal Pay Act, is the U.S. and Hawaii any closer to equal meaning equal? We called Rachel Lyons of the National Partnership for Women and Families. She's the Senior Government Affairs Manager for Workplace Programs. She's on the line now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We've talked a lot about wage gaps and the fact that, you know, Hawaii looks better than most states, but that's not something that should make any woman feel good.
True. We did an analysis of the wage gap across the country, comparing every state, looking at every congressional district, and we found that in Hawaii, women make on average 86 cents to the dollar that every man makes, which is better than the 79 cents, which is the national average. But it's not the same for all Hawaii women. Latinas in Hawaii make 67 cents on the dollar, and Asian women in Hawaii make 73 cents on the dollar.
And that's compared to white non-Hispanic men?
That's correct.
When we talk about these numbers, invariably people will say things, but doesn't that really depend on what industry you're in? And according to what you found, the answer is no.
That's correct. These numbers, these big national numbers, they're not comparing men and women in the exact same job, but they are a red flag about a problem. But when you look at other studies that do hold for the things that contribute to a difference in pay differential, things like education, industry, and work pattern, a gender-based wage gap still exists. And that unexplained portion of it can be as high as 38% or 8 cents on the dollar, according to new recent research.
So you're saying that the wage gap isn't necessarily explained by the choices people make in their work lives?
Exactly. There is still discrimination at work, especially against, and women are still doing that dual duty, right? Still working a full-time job and then going home to a second shift. And those stereotypes about mothers and women as caregivers is impacting the wages that they take home.
It's not necessarily a stereotype. I mean, it's reality. I think there was a book that came out in the 80s or early 90s that talked about the second shift. And from what you said, we know that it's still happening.
It is, very much so. And unfortunately, women are being punished for it, women, whether they have children or not. When women, there is a wage gap for mothers. Mothers make 71 cents compared to fathers, and it's even worse for single parents. But, and where mothers will receive a wage cut for having children, fathers receive a bonus.
A bonus in what sense?
They often, when fathers have kids, they will see actually an increase in their wages.
That seems to suggest that we still look at parents, obviously not terribly equally, and that despite, you know, the quest for having time off when someone becomes a parent, whether they're a mother or a father, being able to have some family leave, all of that that has been filling a lot of the national conversation and some of the conversation here in Hawaii, that we're not really there yet.
Yes, we're not really there. We really lack basic workplace standards that would allow both parents to fulfill their caregiving responsibilities. Like you said, we lack a national paid sick day standard or paid family medical leave that would enable people to give them financial support and job protection while they're managing those home responsibilities. So we're left with the boss lottery. It depends on whether you have a good employer or not as to whether you will be able to be there for your family.
What's it going to take, Rachel, for this to turn from conversation to actual policy? We've talked about this for such a long time. Certainly the Equal Pay Act was in, 1963? It seems not to have been terribly effective, obviously.
Well, the Equal Pay Act has been effective, but it does have loopholes, and we need to close those loopholes. And I think that the conversation has really changed. Equal pay, the issue of equal pay, is incredibly popular, and you saw that with the increased focus over yesterday's Equal Pay Day. But we need people to call on their members of Congress to pass the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would close those loopholes, demand work and family policies like paid sick days and paid leave so that all parents can take care of their family members without endangering their jobs. There's still some work to be done to create policy that would enable all of us to support our families and close the wage gap.
The Paycheck Fairness Act has come up a few times, not done terribly well. Is there a chance in your mind that in the very near term that this will pass?
There's always a chance. The Paycheck Fairness Act has passed Congress, passed the House twice. It was with bipartisan support. As long as people continue to pressure Congress and say, this is something we need you to do now. Women are tired of waiting. You know, the women of Hawaii can't wait another minute to get that 14 cents that they're owed.
I mean, passing in one chamber is a good thing, certainly, but it all comes down to, will the Senate agree? Will there be agreement in the way the bill is written in both chambers, and will it, in fact, become law? What more do you think that women need to do on the front end of as they're entering the workplace, as they're in the workplace, without making themselves targets?
You need to educate yourself. Know what the salary scales and thresholds are in your industry. Unfortunately, negotiation is not a silver bullet, and in some cases is a two-edged sword for women. We have special words in this culture for women, assertive women, that aren't always very kind. So I do advise women entering the workforce to know what their worth is and to demand it, but to proceed with caution.
Rachel Lyons, are women bosses any better than men?
There's not any evidence that there's a difference right now.
That seems to suggest that women are also not necessarily the ally of other women.
That it is unclear, right? So women are still bosses and still at the mercy of their company and their company policies. But we know less about that on an individual level. I think the interesting thing about this national data is that no matter what occupation or industry, there still is a wage gap. So we need to be working on that.
All right, Rachel Lyons, thank you so much for joining us. We'll keep a watch over this and talk to you in future. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Rachel Lyons is the Senior Government Affairs Manager for Workplace Programs at the National Partnership for Women and Families. She joined the National Partnership in 2011 and is responsible for coordinating federal education and advocacy work and family policies, including paid sick days, paid family and medical leave, and the expansion of the Family and Medical Leave Act.
And good morning. Great conversation on the Equal Pay Act and what a long way we have to go. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll free 877-941-3689. Programs like The Conversation is something that we produce every day for 5 days a week. I mean, it's a resource-intensive program, and we really would like you to support it. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. Good morning, I'm Wayne Yoshioka, HPR's political reporter, and we have three challenges to help us make our goal attainable. We have a $3,000 goal for the conversation, and we have a matching gift in the amount of $300 from Dr. and Mrs. Masao Takai, who write, "The programs are heartwarming and gives us a lot of info we're interested in. We like that the news is delivered with a calm, deep voice." Wow. Thank you very much, Dr. and Mrs. Masao Takai. 941-3689 on Oahu. The numbers to call, 877-941-3689. Joined at the table by, oops.
Something's coming in for a landing.
Yes. And if you've been listening all week to the 8 days of the pledge drive, you know that that's the Radio Files Mystery Message Clue of the Day. Today's word from the mystery message is radio.
Of course it is.
That's every day.
Yeah. We're going to say that two more times. Radio. Radio. Hawaii Public Radio needs your help. Give us a call at 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll-free from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. We have volunteers from Islands Hospice waiting for your call. Gene Evans.
Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning.
It's a glorious, glorious morning.
And we are more than halfway, and we
could
do this
possibly
today.
The end is nigh, as they say.
We also have Dr. Michael Duick from Islands Hospice. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having us today.
And you have brought all your volunteers, all seven of them. They're answering the phones, making pledges. And, you know, you really enjoy Hawaii Public Radio, as you were saying.
Yes, I've been a longtime fan of Hawaii Public Radio. I can't imagine driving all over the island without you tuned into my radio.
And you live in Kaka'ako now. It's a vibrant, growing urban center.
Yes, and close to the office.
Yes, that's the main thing. We also have Molly Solomon, General Assignment Reporter for HPR. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning. Just about waking up now.
Oh, that's okay. Casey's been up for 2 hours already.
I'll steal some of his energy.
He's been kind of in and out.
Yeah.
And we have something to entice our listeners to give us a call at 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll-free 877-941-3689. Go ahead,
Molly. We do. There's a great offer on the table. It's a special event that we have. We didn't plan it, but the Maui Brewers Festival did. They're going to be having their Maui Brewers Festival at the MAC. That's at the Maui Arts and Culture Center, Saturday, May 14th at 3:30. And this is an event that's already sold out. There aren't any tickets available, but they were able to score a pair of tickets for Hawaii Public Radio. So if you do call 941-3689, or perhaps if you're on Maui or one of the other islands, 877-941-3689, at a pledge of $30.41 a month, that breaks down to a dollar a day, that'll get you two tickets to that event, as well as two HPR2 pint glasses. And these are great pint glasses. I know I've got a set at home, but they're nice, sturdy. They've got the HPR logo on there, so you can go to the Brewers Festival, try samplings of different Maui local craft beers, maybe even in your HPR pint glass,
ooh,
too.
Yes, that makes me thirsty already. And that'll make us meet this matching gift in the amount of $300 from Dr. and Mrs. Masao Takai, who write, "The programs are heartwarming and gives us a lot of info we're interested in." Give us a call, 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. We have volunteers from Islands Hospice and Dr. Michael Duick. Dr. Duick, you guys perform such a wonderful service, especially in the rural areas of Hawaii, and where people wouldn't have any other option other than, you know, Hospice Hawaii.
Well, thank you for saying that. It really is an honor to serve this community, and especially in the rural areas of Oahu and Maui, where we operate.
And you have one in Hawaii Island, right? On Hawaii Island?
No, Islands Hospice serves Oahu and the island of Maui, all the way up to Hana.
All right.
Wow,
that's great. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll free 877-941-3689. Gene Evans?
Well, I'm going to say thanks to some folks from your neck of the woods, actually, Wayne. Oh. Suzanne Irish called in from Hilo, and this, of all the reasons for pledging, this is the most heartfelt so far today. Because my daughter is working the phones at HPR. Thanks, Mom. Michelle Bowerman, also working the phones here. She's from Hawaii Kai, and she's with the Islands Hospice Group, and she became a member and says, because HPR supports our community, as does our organization, Islands Hospice. So thank you so much, Michelle, for your time and for your pledge. Very much appreciated.
And we're going to be back. We're going to go back to the conversation in about 40 seconds. We really want to make this matching gift in the amount of $300. We have a premium gift there that will do it for us. And what's that, Molly?
And yes, we still have this premium on the table. Those are two tickets. It's a pair of tickets to the Maui Brewers Festival at the MAC, and that's May 14th. And we'll throw in two HPR pint glasses as well. Pledge of $30.41 a month.
So the numbers to call, 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll-free from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. We have volunteers from Islands Hospice serving Maui and rural Oahu. Give us a call. Now back to Chris Vandercook.
Hey, thanks, Wayne and Molly and Jean at the pledge table. You're back with the conversation on HPR2. What would animals say if they could speak to us? We know they have personalities of their own. What would language add to the mix? It's an idea that has special appeal to the young, and children's literature is filled with talking creatures. Lisa Bogus, who teaches theater at La Pietra, has taken that notion at the heart of a new fantasy play to be performed by her students called Born to be Wild. She's with us this morning. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Chris.
Kids are extremely open to the idea of animals having varied personalities, and talking just seems like a pretty natural progression, doesn't it?
Absolutely. They're excited about this show, this opportunity to share our issues, our social dilemmas from the perspective of different animals. Six scenes with six different families of animals, the family of bats and deer and farm animals who sneak into Farmer Joe's house to find out what's really going on with the humans.
And if you take issues away from their human context, put them in a bat suit, there's still those issues, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was talking to you earlier about the family of bats who have a mother and father who are worried sick because their teenage daughter has been out during the daylight hours.
Yeah.
And so they're pacing back and forth, worrying, where has she been, who's she hanging out with? And it turns out that the daughter bat's been fraternizing with humans, which horrifies the mother and father. When the mother finds out that a human has touched her, she says, "Oh, no, now we'll have to get her tested for rabies." And the daughter says, "Mom, that's just an urban legend. Not all humans have rabies." And the mother's, can't conceive of that and says, "Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I'm sure that all humans have rabies." Kind of what you were mentioning mirrors our fear of bats. The bats are feeling for us in this production.
Exactly. And it's easier to feel for animals if we invest them with human emotions, but they probably have a lot of those human emotions.
Absolutely. A herd of sheep are going to have the mischievous one and the shy one and the stubborn one.
Mm-hmm. For kids playing these parts and sort of getting into that person, what's it been like sort of, coaching your students to be bats and what have you got, a flamingo, a deer?
Yeah, they embrace it. Children are ready to embrace the personalities of animals. No one gets down on the floor and gets to know the puppies like the kids do.
Yeah.
The scene with the flamingos, One of them is very bold and adventurous and wants to try new things. The other one is afraid of the social stigma. Says, don't, Barbara, don't do it. Just stand here on one leg. It's what we're supposed to do. And Barbara doesn't want to. She wants to strut. She wants to be different. And so, you know, the animals are experiencing differences and frustrations with social norms, peer pressure, minorities seeking revenge, all of the same issues that we're experiencing, the animals are, and the students at La Pietra, that's no barrier for them.
Sure.
They embrace that.
Well, what ages are your kids?
There are 17 actors in the show. 8 of them are middle schoolers, 6th through 8th graders, and the others are high schoolers. It's a wonderful blend. They
and a pretty wide range of you know, development, of growth.
Absolutely.
Into understanding these kinds of issues.
We have Lonnie Hooley Gilbert, and who's a seasoned actor and a 6th grader. Also, Shansley Glenn, a 6th grader, and everything in between. And they are teaching each other, guiding, learning from one another. It's a really well-rounded blend.
How much of being a director is doing that? Is not so much you're providing guidance as getting them to guide one another?
If you do it right, that's 90% of it.
Really?
You know, creating the environment and letting them teach each other and you know, creating a framework where they do learn from one another and become something greater than any one could be, you know, on their own.
That's not a perspective that's universal among directors, am I right? I mean, some directors go so far as wanting to provide line readings and things like that. You're obviously not that kind of director, yeah?
No, I think that's very limiting. That's only the capacity. You only get the greatness of the director, and I want greatness beyond me. I want the greatness of these 17 people and me can create. And I won't be limited by being a dictator, you know. Go on.
No, I'm just sort of picturing if you're working with one of your young actors to be a spider or a bat,
mm-hmm.
and run their lines and sort of you want them to arrive at comfort with the inflection that they're using, that kind of thing. But how do you get to that point with them?
Mm-hmm.
Just running the lines and talking it over?
Well, you know, running the lines and learning the lines gives them that once they know the lines, they don't have to worry about knowing the lines. So mm-hmm. that's obviously the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, we think try them, trade roles, try them from a different perspective, think about situations that you know, enhance that. There's a scene, the last scene of the show is the deer scene,
mm-hmm.
and there are three scenes, and La Pietra is an all-girls school, but the girls are playing the parts of mothers and fathers and big brothers and little brothers, and they are, you know, they have no problem with that. They jump at the opportunity to play all kinds of diversity. So in this scene, the two older teenage brothers are goading the little brother to run across the highway. He needs to do it to prove himself, to be a man, to show that he's as macho as the older brothers. The younger brother doesn't want to. He's like, isn't that extremely dangerous? And they're like, yeah, but you got to do it. And so this middle schooler is playing the younger brother who doesn't want to run across the road. Nicky
right.
Young is the plays the part of the younger brother. And the older brothers say, you got to do it. You got to be a man. And so and Nicky, being a middle school girl, hasn't really experienced that. So we talked about, oh, think about the football team. You know, and we all, when the testosterone is high.
Yeah.
And how do you get so pumped up that you do something stupid? And so that's a little bit outside of the box for a lot of La Pietra girls, but we got there. You know, we talked it up and we pumped ourselves up until she could achieve that sense of, I can just on a dare get so pumped up that I run across a highway. And she does, and she stalls out in the middle of it. But anyway, it is a comedy. It does have a happy ending.
Well, good. It sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me here, Chris.
La Pietra drama director Lisa Bogus is staging the fantasy play Born to be Wild by Brian Starchman. That's April 21st at 6:30 and April 22nd at the same time inside the La Pietra Gym. You can get details on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the National Kidney Foundation of Hawaii, striving to increase awareness and treatment of kidney diseases affecting 1 in 7 Hawaii residents. Learn more at kidneyhi.org.
Umulokai, ulanai, umau, ukaholabe, uhavaiti.
We've been on a bit of a Scottish kick lately, and today's backyard quiz is no exception. It surrounds the story of a Scottish botanist who came to a mysterious end on Hawaii Island in 1832. He was found in a pit used to trap wild pigs, and people who knew him well doubted that the experienced naturalist could have fallen in by accident. He was only 35 when he died, but he was an accomplished person who had done a great deal in his short life, classifying more than 200 plant species. For years, he had traveled from Britain to the American West Coast and then on what was then called the Sandwich Islands, otherwise known as Hawaii. Today, he's probably best remembered by a tree that bears his name, and it's his name we're looking for this morning. You can call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer, and the first one to get it right gets the T-shirt.
And this is The Conversation on HPR, Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook, and for today's international news, here's a look at global events from the BBC.
And good morning. I'm Wayne Yoshioka, HPR's political reporter, and we have a goal of $3,000 for The Conversation. And to help that along, we have a matching gift in the amount of $300 from Dr. and Mrs. Masao Takai, who write the programs are heartwarming and gives us a lot of info we're interested in. So give us a call, 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands and elsewhere. And we have volunteers from Islands Hospice. They're waiting for your call. And we have Dr. Michael Duick from Islands Hospice, and he is going to bump us up in terms of our matching gift.
Well, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Thank you for having us. Our staff has been having so much fun answering the phones, but I think we'd like to see it ring a few more times. So what I'd like to do is increase this generous matching gift of Dr. Takai, and Islands Hospice would like to raise that to $1,000 total for matching.
High stakes.
Well,
Let's go. Thank you,
Dr. Duick. I mean, that will give us $1,000. That'll knock off one-third of our goal
Two-thirds.
The conversation. Mm-hmm. Two-thirds. That's right. Match a gift.
That's really generous. That's really generous. And it actually increases what our goal is for the hour, but what it does is give us an opportunity to take a big leap forward to our eventual end goal. So let's put this together. It's a rare combination of events which will have allowed this.
But this happened right here.
Yeah.
Right. The
pledge
table.
Just happened.
Yeah. Yep.
So come on, let's get a piece of the $1,000 and put it toward Hawaii Public Radio. The number to call, 941-3689. If you could dial it from the neighbor islands, 1-877-941-3689. You can pledge online as well. But give us a call. We'd like to talk to you.
And this will really help us reach our goal. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. Volunteers from Islands Hospice. We have Michelle Bowerman. She's also on the phone. And we have David Larson. He's on the phone, so give us a call. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. And we have Molly Solomon. We have something to entice people
to. We do. We still have these pair of tickets to the Maui Brewers Festival at the MAC that's coming up Saturday, May 14th at 3:30 p.m. And we only have one pair available. So, you know, you don't want to wait on these. Somebody might snatch them before you call in. But, yes, only one available pair to this event. It looks like it's going to be a great time. You can sample a different selection of brews. It's going to be at the Maui Arts and Culture Center. And in addition to those tickets, we're going to throw in two HPR pint glasses as well. So really great deal for that $30, $41 a month pledge.
Here's an update from the front, Wayne. There's only $800 to go now on that challenge.
So we've met this $300?
Well, no. $1,000
now. Okay, $1,000.
Yeah. So $800 to go. But it means people are responding to your really generous challenge, Dr. Duick. Thank you so much for giving us that jump start necessary to get us to our goal. $800 to go to that $1,000 we can roll in much, much closer to finishing this thing on time or early.
And we do want to thank all of our volunteers from Islands Hospice. I understand you have 240 employees working round the clock for all of our residents here on Oahu and Maui. So thank you, Dr. Duick.
Oh, thank you. And we're so proud of our staff that serves the communities of Oahu and Maui. And thank you for mentioning them and acknowledging them. I can tell you, Molly, I've been to the MAC since I do fly to and from Oahu,
right,
from Oahu to Maui frequently,
Maui.
And what a lovely venue.
Mm.
I imagine whoever picks up that is going to be very
gonna be
happy.
Yeah.
And you spent some time on Maui, so you probably enjoyed it a lot.
Absolutely. What a lovely island.
$650 to go now on that challenge. So we're cooking down here in the basement, folks. It's because you are calling. You're making that connection. You're picking up the phone and dialing 941-3689, 877-941-3689. We would love to hear from you.
$2 a day. $2 a day will get us there.
Yep, $30.41 a month. Get us to this goal. This is a hybrid kind of challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Very,
very
unusual. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Dr. Duick, for doing this. Dr. Takai put up $300. Dr. Duick and the folks from Island Hospice said, I tell you what, we'll make it an even $1,000 because it's going to advance us closer to where we want to be. And we only have $650 to go to roll that $1,000 into the pot and get the conversation doing its part.
And we can't leave this on the table because that'll take us to two-thirds of our goal. 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll free 877-941-3689. We have Michelle Bowerman. She's eating a donut. Is that a donut?
No, it's
oh,
a
it's okay. Oh, okay. She's eating fruit. She's
that's
being
okay.
Nice and healthy. Give her a call. 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll free 877-941-3689.
We've got to get these little intermediate goals. So let's meet this challenge in this break. We've got a couple minutes to do it. It just takes folks who are dedicated to the proposition that we can keep this publicly funded, community-organized radio station on the air for another 6 months. We've got hybrid challenges. We've got great volunteers waiting to answer the phone. Let's do this right now. You can do it. You can support the conversation. Get us to this goal. 941-3689. Dialing from Maui or Hawaii Island or Kauai, 1-877-941-3689. Don't forget Molokai.
And, you know, we really can't leave this money on the table. I mean, we've worked so hard, haven't we, Molly?
And we only have $650 to go. We could do that in a couple phone calls at $1 a day. That breaks down to $30.41 a month. You can make this happen, folks. 941-3689, 877-941-3689. And, you know, we've had so much support. A tremendous amount of calls came in yesterday. We really want to ride that wave and keep it going. We don't want to put the brakes on it today. We want to make sure that the momentum continues because it can, folks. We know it can.
And Dr. Duick, I mean, thank you so much for putting up this great challenge. I'm sure we're going to make this. I mean, we have our volunteers waiting on the line. They'll be on the line even though we go back to the conversation. So thank you, Dr. Duick, and all your volunteers.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's been a real treat to listen to people call in and talk about how much this radio station means to them. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Dr. Duick. 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll-free from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. We have volunteers from Islands Hospice waiting for your call, so give them Oh, there go the phones. All right. We're going back to the conversation with Beth Ann for a reality check.
Thanks very much, Wayne, and nice to hear the reality of that phone ringing. Now, who gets what water on Maui has long been a contentious issue. Yesterday, the Senate passed a water rights bill that has already been heavily amended and loudly protested to change the permitting process for access to water from public lands. Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair has a reality check of the key sticking point. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
All right, so let's talk about what that point is, and it surrounds Alexander and Baldwin.
That's right. So the key question still is, will somehow A and B still be allowed to divert millions of gallons of water every single day from East Maui streams? The money, water is money. Water is going to Central Maui. That, of course, is where their sugar mill has been in operation, but that's closing. And then they want to go into diversified agriculture, and so therefore they need the money. But this, I said money again, they need the water.
Freudian slip there, kiddo.
Money is water. There's no question about that. But water is also life, and that is the protest coming from the Sierra Club of Hawaii, Native Hawaiians, other environmental groups, and the taro farmers in East Maui saying, look, we cannot do our job. We cannot fulfill our livelihood unless we have this water helping us instead of going to Central Maui.
You're talking about people who are talking specifically about livelihoods, yes, but also cultural practitioners too, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. That is very much part of this as well. But A and B is a very powerful landowner, and it has its own business interests on Maui. It's a very big player. So the question is, now that this bill is passed out of the House and Senate, heavily amended, what's going to happen in conference committee? And, of course, that starts next week. And that's the time when the public really doesn't have any idea what's going on because all the negotiation is done behind closed doors until the end of session, and then suddenly you have a bill, and, whoa, what's in that bill? That is going to be the big question.
And we also watch during that time for bits and pieces of bills to migrate to other bills. So what may happen, certainly behind closed doors, is a big issue. Nonetheless, there are going to be a lot of people who are still talking to their lawmakers and still trying to advance their positions. Is there really a way for this bill, as contentious as it is, to come out successfully with both sides feeling that they got at least something?
There is a desire to have a middle path, something that is a compromise that satisfies A and B, that satisfies the taro farmers. That will be the big question. A lot of what happens in conference committee is horse trading. People saying, well, look, I'll give you this if you give me that. We'll see what comes out, but I do know that senators and representatives, many of them, feel that the best thing would be a win-win situation. We'll see if they can pull that off.
That's going to be a tough one, given the fact that this has been so deeply contentious and has such divided issues among people who are looking for what water should be going rightfully where.
And remember, this is a matter that is actually in the courts right now. A court ruled in January that A and B could not keep getting these permits year after year to keep diverting this water. So here you have a case of the legislature getting involved in the judiciary, although as the bill is currently written, there's some question as to how actively that will have an impact. So there's all sorts of things at play here, politics, the law, Native Hawaiian rights, and did I mention money? Yes, I did.
Well, right, and money for DLNR because they need to potentially have more people to be able to make sure that this process happens appropriately.
That's right. That's one of the things that's in the bill, some money to help them have more people help process those permits. There has been some sluggishness in getting that process moving along.
All right. We got to go, but we'll talk to you in the morning.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
Thanks, Chad. Chad Blair reports for Civil Beat.
Support for today's programming comes from the 11th Annual Hawaii Book and Music Festival, celebrating reading, storytelling, and music, April 30th and May 1st on the grounds of Honolulu Hale. Event schedule online at hawaiibookandmusicfestival.com.
In today's Backyard Quiz, a name that came up during our interview with Scottish radio producer Billy Kay about the history of his countrymen in the Hawaiian Islands. This man was a widely traveled botanist who made 3 trips to Hawaii and to the west coast of the mainland in the early decades of the 19th century. He died under mysterious circumstances on Hawaii Island when he was only 35. He was popular with missionary families of the period, and several of those early settlers wrote about him in their memoirs. As Emma Lyons Doyle wrote, quote, "He was loved on Hawaii, this amusing Britisher who must always have his tea." He wasn't popular with everyone, evidently. Speculation that he had been murdered went on for decades after his death, with suspicion focusing on a shady character by the name of Ned Gurney. We may never know for sure, but we remember botanist David Douglas by the Douglas fir tree that bears his name.
And Victoria Anderson called in from Palolo. She was obviously listening to your Monday conversation with Billy Kay, and
right.
She knew the answer. So, Victoria, an HPR t-shirt will be on its way to you. Thanks very much for calling. That's the answer to today's Backyard Quiz. And if you've got a quiz for us, send it in. We'd like to see it. Send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
It's unlikely that Tatiana Howard knew just what she was creating when she started her first Butterfly Effect wave riding event 10 years ago. It was intended as a non-competitive, girls-just-want-to-have-fun exercise, and it clearly struck a chord, spreading to beaches around the world. After its 10th year, it's coming to Maui this weekend, and Tatiana's in the midst of preparations. We spoke to her the other day.
The Butterfly Effect is a non-competitive event for women in water sports.
Uh-huh.
And it started here on Maui, where I grew up. 10 years ago, it's a 10-year celebration this year, which is exciting and unbelievable to me. I didn't expect to even have it grow into what it has become. And, yeah, it's just a time to have an event that's building community over competition, you know, and just being together, not only for a contest, but just to celebrate sport, health, fitness, and friends.
With a little bit of a message as well, yeah?
Yeah, to empower and inspire women in water sports and also to give back to local charities. And this year, we're going to give back to the Paia Youth Center in Paia. Yeah, in the past, it's always changing on Maui. We've done Women Helping Women, and people brought clothing donations one year, and the other year we did Plant a Wish Foundation, and every participant equaled one native tree planted on Maui. And then the Butterfly Effect has also been in 18 countries since the start of it. It's expanded worldwide, and we've had like 42 events with thousands of participants now. And so whenever we travel, the charity is different, you know. In Dominican Republic, we support the Dream Project, which is about bringing education and teachers to their spot. So
Tatiana, you started this on Maui, and it has now spread to a dozen countries, is that right?
More than a dozen, 18 countries, yeah. Yeah, I just started with this little idea of doing a downwinder. I'm a windsurfer and kite, I'm a water girl.
Uh-huh.
And I was traveling around doing the professional windsurfing circuit in Europe and just around the world. And it just didn't fit with me. I do the sports because I just love it. My heart sings when I do it, and I just love to be out there and riding the wind and on the water, like skimming across. It's just such a magical thing, especially on Maui. And you'll be windsurfing far out and look back, and you can just see the beautiful Haleakala, you know, and the green field is just so amazing, and I just love that part of it. And so when I started doing competitions, it just didn't really click. Why do we only get together for contests? Like, I love the community of, you know, all these athletes together, but let's do it, you know, non-competitive. I just thought it'd be fun, especially at downwind on Maui. You know, that's where it started. You can ride waves, you know, from reef to reef, from Ho'okipa all the way down to Kanaha. So it's like kind of a connecting wave all the way down. It's something you want to do with someone next to you. You don't really want to do that alone.
Uh-huh.
You know, that it's kind of adventurous to do together, you know?
Downwind all the way, yeah?
Yeah, and totally. We're just, like, rooting each other on. We're trying to do better, you know, just for ourselves rather than do better to be judged, you know, as in the contest. So we're still, you know, practicing flips and stuff, and I mean, now it's grown so much that I had to move the event from Hokipa to Baldwin. In Baldwin, you can only launch stand-up paddling. So now it's just become a really big stand-up paddle event, too.
How many people do you expect this year, Tatiana?
I don't know. It's always kind of surprising. Every year, I'm like, there's no way it can grow from last year. You know, we had like 400 people show up last year.
Really?
And the year before was 200. So it always seems to double. And everyone's like, where are you getting these girls from? I'm like, I don't know. Like, it just keeps expanding, and it's just unbelievable.
And this is a women's only event, yeah?
Yeah, it's a women only, like the paddle portion, just for ladies. But we invite the community to come down, and the guys and boyfriends and husbands and sons to come and support and just be on the land and root us on. But the actual paddle portion is just for women.
So
it's just girls when we're going down.
So it's very likely, Tatiana, that we're going to see hundreds of you paddling downwind coming up this weekend.
Yes. For sure.
It'll be a couple hundred,
guaranteed.
I'm trying to picture what kind of spectacle that's going to be. That's quite a sight.
Yeah, it's funny for the people down the coast that don't know about the event and just enjoying the beach, you know, and then they're alone, and then all of a sudden they just feel like all these pink, you know, pink lycras or whatever color we're wearing, you know, just kind of fill up the ocean and then disappear down the coast.
Yeah, it would be sort of like
what's that?
It would look like a some kind of vision almost, Tatiana.
Yeah.
When you were on the professional circuit, it sounded as if you really felt that competition wasn't really necessary to the enjoyment of the sport. But most events for a professional windsurfer are arranged as competitions, right?
Yeah. So it wasn't new. When I first started this non-competitive event, you know, it's hard to get sponsors. They're like, why would we sponsor you guys just to go out and have fun? But now it's kind of caught on, and it seems like there's more non-competitive events happening all around. You know, now it's not so strange, but in 2007 when it started, it was like, well, why would we support that?
You know, I would think that sponsoring somebody for the very express purpose of having fun would be kind of an ideal setup.
Yeah, I mean, it's attractive, you know, when you know, people are having fun, they're smiling, people look, you know, it's nice to see, you know, it's addicting. You're like, oh, I want that same feeling, you know, people are drawn to that, I feel like, rather than competition, really hardcore, you know, you kind of get put back if you're not good enough, you know, so that's why the event is to invite more people to come, and it's okay if you're intermediate level, and, you know, you're trying to get better, you don't have to be perfect, you know.
Tatiana Howard is the founder and coordinator of the Butterfly Effect, a non-competitive stand-up paddling, kayak, and canoe paddling event all day Saturday. It starts at 8 a.m. at Paia Youth and Cultural Center on Maui. Bethann, this is, as Tatiana was just saying, this is a non-competitive event for women, started by a woman who has experience of traveling around to women's sporting events, around competitive events, and asking herself why they had to be competitive.
I like what you said about having that wall of women coming at the beach, you know, all those women on boards. I wonder what would happen if we had a similar situation for women who are asking for equal pay.
It would
if
send
we could
a
have
message.
A wall of women like that, that would send a message, I'm sure.
Sure would.
What message? Well, we might have to craft that a little bit better, but for the moment, we're going to say goodbye, and we're going to go off to Pledge Central and find out how our message is being delivered over there and whether it's being answered by pledges. So how about that, Wayne?
Well, let's hope so. We got $430 left on this $1,000 challenge. Give us a call, 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. Support programs like The Conversation, 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. Gene Evans?
Well, I would suggest you support The Conversation, and all the rest of the programs will be a bonus. when you think about that.
Because we are mission-driven.
Right.
We provide information from the community, by the community, so it's really something. And we could end today, but we need your help to do that. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. We're suggesting $12.50 a month for the T-shirt level, and Molly Solomon, that T-shirt is a beautiful thing to have.
It is. I'm looking at it right now. It's a nice, comfortable shirt this year, too. Everybody's been saying how nice it feels when you put it on. But it's a nice navy blue shirt, kind of a classic front with the HPR logo. But on the back, it's got this snapshot of our universe. Is that right, Gene?
It's a theoretical universe with huge planets.
Maybe not our universe, but it's asking. Yeah, maybe yours. But it's asking the question on the back: are you listening?
Sure. Radio waves, you know, go on forever. So what we're seeing right now may not penetrate you today, but somebody in Alpha Centauri in a couple thousand light years is going to figure out the message.
If you are listening, 941-3689, 877-941-3689. You know, we'd only need three callers at that $12.50 a month level, and we'd meet our challenge. We'd meet this challenge that was actually increased by the very generous folks over at Islands Hospice and Dr. Michael Duick. So we don't want to leave that on the table, folks. We've got about 3 minutes or so to make that in, so please do call if you haven't yet.
$430 left to go on that $1,000 challenge from Islands Hospice. And, you know, Dr. Michael Duick is here. Let's thank some people.
Yeah, I would like to thank a new member, and not just a new member, but a new sustaining member, Michelle Sahona, who pledged from Mililani. She let us know that she recently got a job in town and commutes back and forth to work like many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And at the start and end of every day, she likes to listen to Hawaii Public Radio. She feels that it broadens her mind and thinks of HPR as a brain gym.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, I like that. A brain gym.
Well said, well said. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free from the neighbor islands and elsewhere, 877-941-3689. Gene Evans, shall we thank you?
Yes, we want to thank a familiar name in these parts, Dean Neubauer from Manoa.
Oh, thanks, Dean.
Thanks, Dean. He's a member of the board of directors. He's a volunteer, and he always calls in support.
I think
of
his
province.
Pets are also supporters.
Yes,
of
they are.
Yes.
Sustaining members know that. An additional gift from another donor from Manoa who wants to remain nameless, but they live in Parker Place. Mm. So that's your neighbors. That's your friends. That's the folks you know in this community getting together to support Hawaii Public Radio. 941-3689. Call us from the neighbor islands. We'd love to hear from Maui today. 1-877-941-3689 or donate online. You can find it.
And Dr. Duick, let's thank another person.
We'd like to thank Dr. Terrence Young from Ala Moana, who called in because he says his patients really enjoy listening to HPR. Mm. So thank you, Dr. Young.
And we have matching gifts in the amount of $300 from Dr. and Mrs. Masao Takai, as well as $700 from Islands Hospice. So let's make that. We've got $430 to go. 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll-free 877-941-3689 and support programs like The Conversation.
Everybody wants the drive to be done. Everybody wants to get back to regular programming. What you have to do is pick up the phone and dial it when you can. Give us 5 minutes, give us a pledge, and let's get back to regular programming. We can do this. We can make it happen in the next little while.
And it's great because you have a choice here. We're not telling you. I mean, we are suggesting perhaps $12.50 a month, but you can give it whatever level you want to or whatever level you can or whatever level you think this is worth to you. I think that's really important to note, whether it's $10 a month, $12.50. Perhaps you can give a dollar a day. But really, the choice is in your hands. We're just waiting for you to call. We would love to hear from you. 941-3689.
Somebody could call in right now, $430, and meet the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
That if you can,
that
help,
can happen. Yep.
If you can help, help now. Let's support The Conversation and support Hawaii Public Radio.
941-3689 on Oahu, toll free from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. We have one caller on the line. We need two more at the $150 level in the next 34 seconds. Give us a call, 941-3689 on Oahu, toll free 877 877- 941-3689. And let's take this generous matching gift from Islands Hospice and Dr. and Mrs. Masao Takai.
And we've got a couple callers coming in now, but we still have about, I'd say five folks that are just staring at their phones. We would love to be using those and talking to you. 941-3689, 877-941-3689.
Dr. Duick, thank you. Thank you so much for bringing your wonderful volunteers. And you've really made all those pledges for us. Make it come true. We have $330 left to go. $330 for $2,000 toward the goal for the conversation. 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll free 877-941-3689. $210 left in the next 25 seconds. And you're tuned to member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, KIPO Honolulu, KIPM Waikapu, KHPH Kailua Kona, KIPH Hana, KIPL Lihue, KAHU Pahala, collectively the stations of Hawaii Public Radio. The numbers to call, 941-3689 on Oahu, $210 left to go. And thanks.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. The House of Representatives is up against a statutory deadline to pass an annual budget. Action is due this Friday, and the pressure is on, the outlook not good. Still, Ryan, the Speaker of the House, told reporters on Capitol Hill,
"It's my goal to pass a budget. We're still having ongoing conversations with our members on that front. We're keeping all options open."
Number two, House Democrat Steny Hoyer told reporters he strongly doubts there'll be final action on a budget by Friday. North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory is attempting to soften a controversial law which, among other things, determines which bathroom a transgender person must use. But WUNC's Jeff Tiberi tells NPR's Here and Now the measure remains controversial.
What the governor did, in part, was he added protections for people based on sexual orientation and gender identity, state employees. What's interesting about this, though, to take it a step further, is that, okay, if that protection exists, the next question will become, what recourse is there? Thinking, okay, if you're a state employee and you are discriminated against based on sexual orientation, could you then file a lawsuit?
WUNC's Jeff Tiberi. Nearly 40,000 Verizon workers are on strike from Massachusetts to Virginia. From member station WNYC, Ilya Maritz reports negotiations over a new labor contract have stalled after nearly 8 months of talking.
Workers say they're fighting to preserve middle-class jobs. Switch worker Rose Stone joined a picket line of about 300 in Manhattan wearing a T-shirt with a message.
Scabs will pay. No one should be crossing that line and going into work. We got to stand united.
Verizon says its workers are well paid and it's offering a 6.5% wage increase. Most of the workers now picketing serve Verizon's landline business, but mobile phones are where the company makes most of its revenues these days. For NPR News, I'm Ilya Maritz in New York.
Lawmakers in Ukraine say they have reconciled differences and have chosen a new prime minister and government to lead the country. Charles Maines has details.
In a video address on Facebook, the head of the Ukrainian parliament, Volodymyr Groysman, said he'd agreed to lead the new government as prime minister, a move Groysman said should help overcome a political crisis triggered when his predecessor quit last Sunday. An official vote will be held tomorrow. Yet political infighting, charges of corruption, and a simmering civil war with pro-Russian fighters in Ukraine's east have all injected uncertainty into Ukrainian politics, delaying billions of dollars of critical foreign aid in the process. Groysman's ascent to the prime minister's post now appears to consolidate power around Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko, who came to office following a 2014 street revolution that ousted Kiev's pro-Russian leadership in favor of building closer ties with Europe. For NPR News, I'm Charles Maines in Moscow.
A magnitude 6.9 earthquake struck in a remote part of northwest Myanmar today. No reports of major damages or significant injuries. The Dow up 168. This is NPR. Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders has won his first endorsement from a Senate colleague. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon declared his support for Sanders in a New York Times op-ed piece. Merkley had high praise for Sanders' positions on the environment and finance and for his work for veterans. Sanders and Hillary Clinton are campaigning in New York City today. The state primary is next Tuesday. One of the most iconic songs of the civil rights movement is the subject of a class action lawsuit. As NPR's Elizabeth Blair tells us, lawyers say "We Shall Overcome" should not be under copyright.
The song has a long history, from slaves singing "I'll Overcome" in the fields to an African-American spiritual.
We will overcome.
Pete Seeger helped make the song famous.
Someday.
The lawsuit claims that the melody and lyrics were already in the public domain and shouldn't have been copyrighted in the first place. The suit was filed on behalf of the We Shall Overcome Foundation. It calls for a return of unlawful licensing fees and a declaration that the song belongs to the public. The defendants, the Richmond Organization and Ludlow Music, declined to comment. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
The State Department's latest report on human rights around the world finds that human rights protections have declined globally. The report says the biggest violators are North Korea, China, Cuba, Sudan, and Iran. The report also condemns terror groups. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Constant Contact, with email marketing features like drag-and-drop editing and mobile-friendly templates. Constant Contact is committed to helping small businesses and nonprofits become marketers. Learn more at ConstantContact.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. What is the federal government's responsibility to satisfying your wants? In 1941, FDR outlined one of four essential freedoms.
What is freedom?
Freedom of speech.
At this point, free speech is nothing more than a nuisance.
Freedom of worship.
Wake up, Christian America. You are being mocked.
Freedom from want.
We would actually go in Walmart and clean ourselves up before we go to
school. In the bathroom.
Save some money.
Freedom from fear.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear.
Freedom from want was one of them. Far from a trivial slogan, this has bedeviled the generations of Americans who have grown up since. In the original Get Rich Quick America, is it healthy to ever not want? Gotta have more. Come on. Is there a minimum of wants that the government would guarantee, and anything on top of that we would do as individuals? Been arguing about that for a long time. Is this what FDR envisioned? What would he make of this description from presidential candidate Bernie Sanders about the city of Baltimore today?
Today, what we're talking about is a community in which half of the people don't have jobs. We're talking about a community in which there are hundreds of buildings that are uninhabitable. We're talking about a community where kids are unable to go to schools that are decent.
Bernie Sanders on a campaign stop in Baltimore. It is a sizable nation of wants. Almost 47 million people live in the United States of wanting. 14.9% of the country is in poverty. For blacks and Hispanics, that number tops 20%. Republican presidential candidate John Kasich of Ohio describes wanting as a perpetual state in the American middle class.
Say you get a family of four and they get, you know, they get about $115 or $120 a week to take care of their groceries, their utilities, their clothing and all that. How do you get this system to work where people don't become permanently stuck?
John Kasich last December. If you look at it that way, in hindsight, Medicare and Social Security don't seem to have been either as expansive or potentially damaging to the economy as was warned when they were created decades ago. But coming to an agreement on what wants people should be freed from worrying about today and what each person needs to be responsible for on his or her own today has been a complicated challenge. It's still being debated today. Father Timothy Graff is director of the Office of Human Concerns for the Archdiocese of Newark, New Jersey, across the Hudson from sparkling Manhattan. It's the contrasts he worries about as he shifts his gaze from the city skyline to the poor neighborhoods in Newark that he serves every day.
I think what FDR was saying is he's saying, what's your attitude? What is the attitude of the country? But what is the attitude of each citizen? So he's really calling for a widening of the vision. And I see so much, both individually and as a country, we're lessening our vision. We're making it narrower rather than the wider, which I think FDR was asking the country to look at.
And poverty is more of a problem today than it was then.
It is. You know, I talk to people every day. You know, they talk about the economic rebound that we had. Well, I'm sure some people rebounded, but it hasn't on most. In the tough economic times we find ourselves, when we're looking at government programs, we're looking at the budget is a moral document. You know, our budget, our numbers, our money, that's where we show our priorities. are we trying to balance the budget on the backs of the poor? Don't demonize the poor, which is so often happens within the electoral process. You know, everyone needs to have another. No, well, it's those people over there. And it could be the poor, it could be immigrants, it could be women, it could be whoever. If those people didn't take my money, then we'd be okay.
Do you think you can articulate what is a freedom from want? I feel as though we haven't really come to grips with what is a comfortable sort of floor from which to build a society.
Well, I think what it's not is that which the federal government says is a living reality. It just doesn't work. How is it that a person or a family can live in a way in which they're not worrying about whether the next thing that comes down the pike will put them on the street? They're looking for decent, affordable housing, which again is very difficult in this area of the Northeast where we are for a myriad of different reasons. They're looking for food security, meaning basically, do I have enough at the end of the month to feed my family? They're looking for decent education. They're looking for a decent job with a living wage. Pope Francis, who's a great friend of the poor, has talked about a living wage. We've talked about that since actually 1890 in the documents from the popes. So I think those are the basics. And basically what people are looking for is they're looking for a sense of security.
So our society should be constructed as a means to have some kind of job, a connection to the community, which pays enough so that my family will have food security and health care. And from that point on, it's up to me to do more than that.
We're dealing with really two different populations at times. There's a part of our population that's going to be chronically unemployable because of disabilities, because of age, because of other issues that they deal with. They're simply not going to fit into the economy. They just can't work for whatever reasons. And then you're going to have people who are chronically underemployed. And the chronically underemployed are those who are working one, two, three jobs. And they're still barely, if, getting by, you know. And so really what the safety net that we would talk about would be providing for those who are in need, unemployment insurance. You know, and what we're seeing both federally and within states is those being drawn back more and more and more. You know, we're seeing within so many of our own parishes and our own Catholic charities, less people come into the soup kitchens, into our food pantries. It's more. We say that with the economic downturn of 6-7 years ago, the face of poverty changed literally. You know, it's much more suburban. It's much more rural than it was 10 years ago. I remember as I was at a meeting with leaders of our food pantries within our parishes, my archdiocese. And so I was meeting with them and they said, is there a change that you've seen in terms of upkick? And some people said, oh yes, it's between 35 and 45% more people looking for food, food assistance, food security. And so one guy said, oh no, we haven't seen anything, we're fine. And the guy next to him started laughing. And so the guy said, why are you laughing? He goes, all the people from your parish are coming to my food pantry because I'm next door. Hmm. And they're embarrassed to come because they know the people from the parish at your food pantry.
You know, the idea that you will come into a food pantry and not feel as though, boy, I'm sure glad this is here, but will instead feel as though you're being caught committing a crime.
Yes.
That, how does that change? Because in some sense, these institutions should be part of the freedom from want.
Well, one of the great things about our food pantries, what we're always saying to people is, remember the people that you serve are your brothers and sisters. That whole idea of solidarity, the whole idea of brotherhood and sisterhood, that we're all in this together. But what it is how do we treat those who come to us? You know, we had a food drive many years ago in one of the parishes I was in. And so we were collecting money and groceries outside one of the local supermarkets. And this guy comes by and he gives us the smallest can of corn you'd ever want to see. He says, I just want to thank you for being here. Last year I was unemployed and I had addiction problems and I came to your food pantry and you helped me. He said, I just needed a couple months help till I got my act back together. I got a job. He says, it's not a great job. I'd like to give you more food, but I can't. All I can give you is this can of corn. That's all I have this week. Maybe next week I can give you more. But what it showed me was, you know, we're all in this together. Why do we have soup kitchens? Why do we have food pantries? Coming from a Catholic tradition, we're serving them because in them we see God. How do you show your love for God? You love your neighbor. We don't serve them because they're Catholic. We serve them because we're Catholic. This is what our faith calls us to do.
So we all struggle to figure out what this freedom from want is.
Mm-hmm. And especially in an electoral cycle where one of the temptations that's faced is we demonize the poor. The poor are lazy. The poor don't deserve our help. One of the things we often do when, especially when we're bringing young people to a soup kitchen, we did this a couple weeks ago in my parish. We went to a local soup kitchen. And so we had some of our teenagers. And so we put them up front. We have them serve. And then we talk about it afterwards. What they see is all of a sudden the poor are not a statistic. They're not a problem. The person I gave some chicken to. We had a group in from somewhere in the Midwest, and they were working at one of our shelters for single mothers. And these are women who would be 4 months pregnant and living in a park if we didn't have the shelter for them. Women who've been on the streets, they're tough. They've had to be tough to survive, and they find themselves 5 months pregnant. And so I dropped them off in the morning, so I was coming back for lunch, and I hear this uproarious laughter from the dining room. And I walk in, and the pregnant homeless woman and the 14-year-old kids from the Midwest living on a dairy farm are telling each other jokes. And all of a sudden, all those barriers, all those separations, all those things that would separate these people are broken down. Why? Simply because they had a meal together. Simply because all of a sudden, it wasn't a statistic, it was Mary. And one of the great phrases that Pope Francis uses again and again and again is we need an encounter. In our faith, we encounter God through prayer and all those things, but we also encounter God in the poor. You know, there's no separation. We're all in this together. I think it's basically the hope that FDR had. The truth of dignity is the same for each person.
Father Timothy Graff, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Father Timothy Graff is director of the Office of Human Concerns for the Archdiocese of Newark, New Jersey. Five years after President Roosevelt laid out his vision for a world free from want, many of you are reporting a reality full of wants, needs, and sacrifices right here at home. New Orleans. I grew up in New York City in the 70s recession. My carpenter father was unemployed for months. I never felt I went without because I was raised to be thankful for food, shelter, hand-me-downs, and love, and not ask for more. Greenville, South Carolina. We're doing it now. Meat's a luxury we can rarely afford, so we're learning how to be involuntary vegetarians.
Hi, this is Roxanne Fucci from Atlanta, and the last 7 years, how hard can a person work and still struggle monthly to pay the mortgage? We used to have vacations, cable, eating out on nights. I didn't feel like cooking. People who still have those luxuries really don't understand. They say, just work harder. I'm just over 50, and I'm quite tired. I can't give anymore. The American dream is an illusion.
Worcester, Massachusetts. I had to minimize expenses during medical school. I didn't have a phone for a year, and I didn't have my own television for 4 years. From Deland, Florida, I had to sleep in my car for a while with my dogs. Unpleasant. And coming up next, with 1.3 billion people and an average annual wage of less than $4,800, the Chinese know a thing or two about going without. We'll talk with a Chinese labor organizer about growing worker unrest in the so-called People's Republic. People who want more in China and aren't afraid to say it.
The Takeaway is supported by TIAA. Whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org. And Staples, offering tools for small business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, and custom frame prints and posters. Designed and printed in-store or ordered online at staples.com. Staples, make more happen.
Hey And good morning. You've been listening to The Takeaway, one of our popular programs here on Hawaii Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Wayne Yoshioka, HPR's political reporter, and welcome to Challenge 2016. A short announcement. We made two challenges, $700 from Islands Hospice and Dr. and Mrs. Masao Takai with their $300 matching gift. Those were met last hour. Give them a hand. We have a $4,000 goal for the takeaway to go on, and we have a $1,000 matching gift in the amount from Peter and Vicky Merriman of Pa'ia. We want to make that matching gift. So give us a call, 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. We have volunteers from Blue Note, Hawaii, waiting for your call. And we'd also like to welcome Molly Solomon, General Assignment Reporter for Hawaii Public Radio.
Hey, Wayne. Good morning.
And we have Conrad Ng, who's the Executive Director, the new Executive Director for Doris Duke's Shangri-La. Good morning, Conrad.
Aloha and good morning. Thank you for having me this morning.
And you are bearing gifts. We have three premiums for the HPR at Shangri-La on Friday, May 27th at 3 o'clock p.m., for a pledge of $240, $20 a month, we have a pair of tickets for a guided tour of Doris Duke's Honolulu home and a reception to follow. Thanks so much, Conrad, for bringing that over.
Well, thank you. I mean, we are strong believers in Hawaii Public Radio. This is a way that we hope that we can show our support for what we believe to be a civic good here in our islands. So however we can support.
I mean, it's just a beautiful home down on the slopes of Diamond Head, I guess, right on the ocean front. And you give these guided tours often?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when Doris Duke passed away, in her will, she wanted this home to be a site for people to understand her love and recognition of the beauty of Islamic arts and culture. And when she had built this home back in the late 1930s, she really brought in a cultural dimension. And so when she passed away, she wanted to make sure that people, the public, people of Hawaii, people around the world could come and appreciate and see the beauty and artistry of Islamic art and culture. So it is something that when we opened in 2002, we wanted to make sure that people could have a chance to see what she saw.
And with all her wealth, this was the only home that she built from the ground up and decorated with Islamic art. It's the only one of its kind.
That's right. I mean, she was a true visionary, I think, when she saw during her trip in the late 30s after she got married, she went on a honeymoon and got a chance to see places like Syria, Morocco, India, and around the world, and then ended up in Hawaii and saw that there was an opportunity to unify a lot of things that she saw and experienced in the world.
So a pair of tickets for a guided tour of Doris Duke's Honolulu home and a reception to follow. For a pledge of $240 or $20 a month, you get a pair of tickets. Does that sound great, Molly?
I want to pledge for this now. But it's really amazing. And this isn't just, you know, a normal guided tour, which you guys already do through the Honolulu Museum of Art. But this is a very special private tour for just HPR listeners and just people that are supporting Hawaii Public Radio. It's really nice to sort of get that personal connection and hear about this incredible home and the beautiful art that she has surrounded herself with. And I think this is one of those opportunities. It's a real experience for people that are pledging their support.
Yeah, it's a real, I mean, I think this is, in our mind, this is going to be very special. It's a chance to really explore some of the grounds that aren't normally available during a regular tour and at a different kind of pace. So we really thought that this would be a real treat for people who support Hawaii Public Radio, for people who really want to see this station and the affiliates really succeed, and how we as a cultural organization can be part of that success. So we hope people will be out there to make that pledge.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
And there's only three pairs of these available that you've brought in. So this isn't something that you want to, maybe I'll check in tomorrow or in a couple days. These probably won't be here anymore. So you do want to call if you want to make sure you've got your pair of tickets for the very special Shangri-La tour, private tour for HPR listeners. 941-3689. That's the number to call. If you're on Hawaii Island, Maui, Kauai, maybe you could make a trip out of it and come over for the weekend and check this out. It's 877 877-941-3689. It's going to be on a Friday afternoon, May 27th at 3 p.m.
And I couldn't do it justice by just trying to describe it on the radio. I mean, all of this art, I mean, every room is like, has its own character.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, as I became the new executive director, I got a chance to just basically sit down on my desk and sit up straight, and then I can see the ocean. And
wow.
that is a beautiful thing. Obviously, in Hawaii, it's a beautiful thing. But then I also got a chance to step through the world, where Doris assembled the house to represent a lot of the experiences, and not just experiences in a typical museum setting where it's encyclopedic, but a chance to experience it how people who lived in that time and in that culture experienced it themselves. And it's a real tribute, I think, to her vision to see how culture can speak to us in the ways in which we actually live in the world. So I just pinch myself every day to really realize that this is real for me, and that we have a real opportunity to continue her vision.
A real treat. For the pledge amount of $20 a month, a pair of tickets for a guided tour of Doris Duke's Honolulu home right there on the shore of Diamond Head, and a reception to follow, yours for $240 a year. 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free 877-941-3689. Let's take a chance to thank some people, Molly.
Yes, we had a flurry of phone calls in that last hour. Emily Stanford calling in with an additional gift from Honolulu. She enjoys the music. Sarah Hodel calling from Honolulu. Longtime listener, loves the stories, makes me feel plugged in. As well as a renewal calling in from Honolulu. Angela Masuba loves all the programming. Thank you.
And we have that premium, that HBR at Shangri-La on Friday, May 27th at 3 p.m. Yours, a pair of tickets for a guided tour of Doris Duke's Honolulu home for a pledge of $240 or $20 a month. Give us a call at 941-3689 on Oahu, toll-free from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. We have volunteers from Blue Note Hawaii waiting for your call, and we have Conrad Ng. He'll be back to describe that guided tour even more. So give us a call, 941-3689 on Oahu. Back to the takeaway.
You're listening to the takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International, in collaboration with the New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
China has hundreds of millions of workers, and 270 million of them are migrants coming to the cities to find opportunities. On paper, in China, it's a workers' paradise with numerous laws protecting workers' rights and supporting safe conditions on the job. Mao's original vision was a workers' utopia, and indeed, the Chinese Communist Party would have you believe that they've solved the freedom from want problem under their system of governing. But a Chinese economic slowdown is a serious matter, with factories closing in 2008, exports declining, wildcat unorganized strikes are rising. In 2015, the China Labor Bulletin, a nonprofit in Hong Kong, recorded over 2,700 strikes, more than double the number in 2014. We turn to Ellen David Friedman, who is a visiting scholar at Sun Yat-sen University in Guangzhou, a city in southern China, and Francine Chen, a grassroots labor organizer with the Center for Social Change in Hong Kong. Friedman says China's needs are self-evident, but it is not self-evident if the workers will ever be enough in solidarity to seriously challenge the government.
The need is the same, I would say, as for workers everywhere. You know, you face conditions of employment in which you're not earning a decent wage, you're not able to afford a family, afford an apartment, pay for your kids to go to school, all the basic things. So there are at least 300 million migrant workers in China working.